Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast on Leverage of the Chat. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is not here because he's too big, much of a bummer last time. He wasn't feeling it. He wasn't believing in the vision. He didn't know that Kobe is better. So instead, we got my good friend, Dave Dufour. As I plugged on the last podcast, you should also be checking out his own podcast on the NBA with Coach Dave Dufour. Dave, how's it going, man?
It is going well. It's a jetty season.
Return of the jetty.
It's incredible. What a day. When we were messaging yesterday and I said one way or the other, this is going to be an amazing podcast because either the Cavs are going to do nothing or they're going to do everything.
Yeah. And they went with the latter. They went the do everything route. The Cavs got rid of half of the Napoleon complexes on the team. They got rid of Isaiah Thomas. Now all we need is for Dan Gilbert to sell, and all of a sudden that would be gone. Dwayne Wade is out of town, requested a trade after last night's game. The team accommodated him, kind of saw the writing on the wall. They had this deal lined up for Jordan Clarkson, who would be taking over the backup point guard minutes. Jetty Osman is now working himself into the rotation and someone that they want to have moving forward. So they accommodated him and sent him back to Miami. George Hill on this team. Rodney Hood. The Cavs stole Rodney Hood, restrict free agent, but a talented upgrade at shooting guard. Dave, what were some of your immediate thoughts from the rush of news that came today?
Well, the Isaiah Thomas component of this trade is not a surprise to me. No. I called this a couple weeks ago. The dude, he's not the same Isaiah Thomas. Coming back from a hip injury like he suffered, you know, he's a little bit shorter than I am. And, you know, when you start to lose a step, like I'm almost 37. I'll be 37 in March. I've seen this with my game, and not to be Bill Simmons about it and make everything about pickup, but could you imagine and to his credit, Isaiah Thomas is probably in the top 1% of athletes in the NBA, like, or healthy Isaiah Thomas was. Right. It's the only way that you can have a guy that size do what he did last season, right? I mean, he's an incredible athlete. But hips are important, especially for basketball players. And the sort of hip injury he has, you don't just come back from. And then not to mention, when you are by far the least productive player on the team who actually plays minutes –
and if possibly running, the least productive player in the league.
Definitely the worst defender in the league. Yeah. There's no one worse. You would think, hey, I'm trying to do my job and I'm gonna keep my mouth shut, try to fly under the radar. And he just wasn't doing that. And you know, this, you know, we've talked a little bit about that locker room, and I've never seen it like that. You know, the stories coming out, you know, even the Woj stuff. Like, we know that Woj didn't really have a foothold in that locker room until recently.
It wasn't hard to connect the dots there. And I think one of the funniest aspects of this is apparently Kevin Love is Teflon. Like, this dude has survived almost everything. You get the locker room mutiny where you have Isaiah Thomas and Dwayne Wade pointing fingers. Brian Windhorst had reported that it was the rift in the locker room was basically the old guard versus the new. And the Cavs basically said, screw it, we're sticking with those championship guys. Sure, Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith overpaid. And Kevin Love has had his ups and downs as a Cavalier. But they stuck with those guys and basically shipped everybody else out of there. So don't come after Kevin Love, because only LeBron in the Cavs front office can lob shots at him.
You know, there's a good chance Kevin Love – stays there longer than LeBron. I think Kevin Love is more likely to finish his contract with Cleveland than LeBron is to re-sign there. So, you know, I think so. Back
so
to
you're
back
saying
to,
both are guarantees that they're it's going to play out that way.
Maybe. But back to the moves, like, sort of as a whole. You know what I really like about it, and I've said this on other podcasts. I was a fan of taking a swing this year while keeping the Nets pick, because I thought there was a way to do that. And that's kind of what they did.
Yep.
They're taking a big swing for this season. They kept the Nets pick. Not only that, but the guys that they brought in, I mean, George Hill is not a great contract, but he's a really good player. He's leading the league in three-point percentage.
Yep.
And he's a great catch-and-shoot guy. So he's going to fit really well next to LeBron. I feel like he was a guy that they should have gone after during the summer. Rodney Hood is a restricted free agent. He's young. He's got huge upside. They're going to have his bird rights in a suppressed market this summer. They could probably keep him somewhere like 4 years, 48, which is fantastic value for a talent like that on the wing.
No,
so
kidding.
They pulled off the craziest thing. I mean, this is sort of like Houston, where, you know, they never had to tank to kind of get really good. They stay competitive. They have a team now that if LeBron leaves this summer, George Hill, Hood, Love, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, they have enough pieces. They're probably still a playoff team next year, and they kept the Nets pick.
Right, right. Yeah,
that's an A-plus day.
I think it shows how confident they are that LeBron is not going to the Lakers, and it was reported earlier this week that the Lakers have moved their focus onto the following year's free agent class just because they don't believe that they can get multiple guys this summer. But for the Cavs to actually clear up cap space for the Lakers and make it possible that they could do it from a roster standpoint, it almost shows just how much confidence they have that LeBron just isn't going there. Otherwise, they wouldn't help him out with that. They get so much younger, too. This was by far the oldest team in the league.
Right.
Now you got Clarkson, Nance, and Hood, who are all 25 years old. So they're not too young that they haven't been in the league and they are still trying to find their way. But they give youth and athleticism to a roster that was just completely deprived of that over the last few years. So there's a lot of different things they can do. And I think the one interesting thing is they didn't sell low on the Nets pick because there weren't any names that were worth that pick available in this trade market. And now you can maybe do a deal on draft night even.
Right.
You can explore those options. I mean, Jimmy Butler moved on draft day last year. And I think that was the better way to go. You shouldn't ever sell low on an asset like that just because you have a sense of urgency. So I think if I'm LeBron, I'm happier with this team than I was yesterday. They did moves. They weren't cheap. They took on added salary. They got younger. They addressed a lot of different needs, and they still have their best asset. So I think overall, like, it's hard to look at this trade deadline and think it's anything other than a win.
Yeah, I mean, when was the last time LeBron had three playmakers on the same team as him? And, you know, they've got Hill, Hood, and Clarkson, who can all be great secondary playmakers next to LeBron.
Yep.
You know, beyond just the three-point shooting, I mean, they could you can run George Hill, Clarkson, and Hood together on a bench unit with Kyle Korver or Kevin Love at the four. I mean, you've got some major offensive firepower, and the defense gets an upgrade. I mean, Hood is big. He's 6'8", and he's going to be guarding guys smaller than him for the most part. You know, I imagine to start, I think maybe you'll have LeBron sort of playing that four role with Hill, Smith, and Hood. I think that would be a smart way to go.
Yeah.
Just for the first, you know, couple weeks or so till these guys kind of get their feet under him. And then by the time Kevin Love's ready to come back, you get to slide J.R. Smith to the bench or even Hood to the bench and go from there. I definitely think they pulled off the craziest thing, which is improving today and not leveraging tomorrow. It was really a job well done. The only complaint I have is trading their own first-round pick for this year.
Yeah.
Because I think those are important. Kudos to the Lakers for getting off of contracts that they needed to move for their two max spots this summer and also getting a late first. I think that was a great move by them.
Mm-hmm.
But it just goes to show how much Isaiah Thomas's trade value had tanked and how tight the market kind of was in general. I mean, Clarkson's been on the market since he signed that contract, basically.
He had been on the market, and it definitely was selling low on Isaiah Thomas. I mean, you go from a guy that was top five in MVP rankings last year, and basically you're dumping him off for not a lot. Like, I do like Clarkson a lot more, and I feel better about that deal after seeing the full picture. Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench, that's something I can get behind. That's a whole lot more length than they had before. And then Larry Nance, I think that's a nice story. Growing up in Cleveland, his dad's old team, and he's an athlete. Like, I think he can fill in with that second unit in a similar way to what Jeff Green did, which is get open, find cutting lanes, and finish with athleticism. And they haven't had a lot of that over the past few years.
Not at all. A lot of old guys with flat tires out there running around.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a team that's wanted to play with pace but just didn't have the personnel to do so. So that's interesting. It definitely was an overpay in that one transaction. I think that kind of speaks to just how desperate they were to get Isaiah Thomas off of this team. And we don't know if the Lakers are going to end up keeping him or if that situation is going to deteriorate. You have his ego versus LeVar Ball. That's going to be interesting.
I had to step out for a little bit, about an hour after the deadline before we recorded this. I came back and already his agent is like texting Rachel Nichols and
in all caps.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Like, there's a certain point where. Yeah, like the Brinks truck stuff kind of started this, right? Back the Brinks truck up, because he felt like he was a max player, and this is part of why Boston wanted to move him. I actually predicted this like the middle of last season. I said, with his contract, it will be seen as a value to some people, to some teams that aren't smart. But if you're forward thinking, who wants to pay a guy who is reliant on athleticism and small a max deal when it's when he's up.
I went back and I listened. I think it was like in May. I went on a Boston podcast just before the conference finals, and I was basically talking about Isaiah and saying how this situation was perfect for him. Like, he was their only offensive option, and that's the way he needs to play. He needs to use that many possessions at that level, which, let's be clear, for all the criticisms, there's not a lot of players that can handle that usage and score that efficiently. That is definitely a skill. Like, that he was incredible last season, but the problem is he can't go into a smaller role, a complementary role, alongside other stars, because when he's playing off ball, it's like he's a complete net negative. Like, he's not creating for other guys. He's just a liability, and for that reason, I just couldn't see him working in a different situation, and I thought the Celtics realized that as well. So I had predicted that they would flip him that summer, they wouldn't pay him, and that they had no intention of keeping him, and that's what ended up happening.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it was smart all the way around. But if you're in his situation where you play a certain way, and then you're injured, you can't play that way. I think you have to be a positive locker room presence in order to stay in the league. Like, let's just be honest. He's playing like a G leaguer at best right now. And to the media stuff has just been ridiculous over the last month for him. Mm-hmm. He really needed to not say a word. Instead, he was like the team spokesperson, and he just got there. Like, it's crazy. And now, he's going to LA, and I was looking at it like, okay, well, it'll be high profile. He can go out there. Maybe he just goes, does his job, shows that he's at least healthy or on his way back. And then maybe he's like looking at like a mid-level deal next year. Right now, I don't know. I mean, teams maybe would be trying to give him like a 1-year deal at the minimum, maybe the Derrick Rose type of deal.
Yeah. He's got getting like the MLE. Like,
yeah. No, MLE is probably too much.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to be generous.
Yeah, that would be a raise over what he's making right now. It would be. And I think that he's looking at minimum deals. I mean, definitely no more than $5 million because teams aren't going to know what they're getting, not just on the court but in the locker room. I mean, could you imagine a contending team bringing in a guy who – the first – he even said it. They go their separate ways when there's adversity.
Right.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're a part of that. So, yeah,
But no, he wasn't willing to accept that accountability, and it would be one thing for him to play so poorly, and I think there was an understanding that it was going to take him time to find his rhythm. But the fact that he refused to change his game at all and saying, this is who you traded for, this is the player I've always been, and this is the player I'm going to be, and he calling out his teammates constantly in the media, going after Kevin Love in the locker room. Like, it just was such a toxic situation. If I'm going to play conspiracy theory for one moment, do you think part of the Cavs giving so much to the Lakers was with the understanding that, hey, you're buying out Brooke Lopez, and then that there is a bit of a wink-wink there? Because that is the one position.
Now, I hadn't thought about that, because Brooke Lopez would be really, really good for the Cavs.
Yep.
That's interesting.
That's now, my conspiracy theory of the day.
Here's the thing. I think Brooke Lopez is getting a buyout. I just think that that's going to happen. Brooke Lopez is too good of a player to just sit there on the bench. I mean, and we've seen the frustration mounting on his face.
He had a career year last year. He was fantastic.
He is really good. Yeah, he is really good. And it's amazing what he's been able to do. I mean, he's one of the best rebounders in the league. The numbers don't reflect it, but the team numbers do.
Yep.
I would love for him to go to New Orleans and be the starting center next to Anthony Davis. I think he's a perfect fit there.
I agree. There
will be probably five or six teams that are going after Brooke Lopez, including, I bet the Warriors would be kicking the tires on him because he would be
upgrade there. They can get Joe Johnson. That's their buyout guy. That's who have allocated to them.
Yeah, but I hadn't thought about, you know, a wink-wink, like, deal with their Lakers are trying to push Brooke to Cleveland. I think that the buyout's going to happen, mm-hmm. and I think you're going to get enough teams going after him. He's going to have his pick. It's all about what he's going to value, right? Like, is he going to look at the Warriors and say, hey, if I go there, man, that's a guaranteed championship. If he goes to the Cavs, it definitely puts him closer.
Yeah.
But does that and it, beat the Warriors?
Yeah, it gives him a chance to have a finals appearance, which who knows what he values. As you said, we don't know what he thinks. I think he'd probably want to go east ideally, but I do agree that the Pelicans would be a great fit. It's funny that Boston was so anxious in signing Greg Monroe. Otherwise, that would have been a great fit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but
him and Horford, and they would rebound like monsters because of the way those two guys play.
Well, unless Tristan Thompson's on the floor, and then Al Horford's going to turn into a pumpkin.
The only guy that
I wasn't going to let that one slide by.
So I guess, I mean, that was my one concern about today was that they didn't upgrade that spot. And while I don't think Tristan Thompson is done, but the knee is obviously an issue.
Yeah. He has looked a lot better since Christmas, which is positive. He's moving a little bit more like himself. The one concerning, he didn't look great against Minnesota defensively. He struggled on the perimeter, and what makes him so valuable is that he's able to switch onto guards theoretically, or at least when he was healthy.
And I mean, that's how they won the title.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He was instrumental to that. So hopefully he can start to get healthy. I one positive, I understand that Thompson, we can debate whether or not he was worth the contract at the time it was signed. He clearly isn't now. Same with J.R. Smith.
But that happens everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And also that happened league-wide because there was an anticipation that the cap was going to skyrocket in a certain way, and that didn't come to fruition. But one thing I do like is that they didn't just dump these guys for expiring deals or in salary dumps, because it's really difficult for the Cavs and teams with this kind of payroll to improve. And they really need that internal improvement. And J.R. Smith last year, he struggled shooting the ball. In the playoffs, he shot over 50% from the floor and from three. Tristan Thompson, like, you're giving him the opportunity to get healthy, get back in game shape, and really work his way back in the lineup. So I think you keep some of that upside that those guys can bring. And at the end of the day, like, even if you traded those guys for nothing, like, even if you cut Shumpert, Tristan and JR salaries off of this team and got nothing in return, you still don't have any cap room. So at the end of the day, I don't think it's harmful to have those guys on there as long as you have a team that's willing to pay this payroll.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And you know, I like JR Smith as a player, and he's starting to come around a little bit with the shooting. And you know, there is something to having a happy locker room, right?
Right.
These guys obviously like each other. This is why the one losing Channing Frye, I think, is a big deal for the locker room. And I think that's a large part of the reason why they're bringing Kendrick Perkins back.
Perk back. We got to dive into – we're going to do a deep dive for like the last 20 minutes of this on Perk.
I want Perk to start and then them to sub in Tristan Thompson at the first whistle and just give him that honorary start every game. And I guarantee –
I thought you were going to say just for the first game.
That would be amazing.
Get the – the first home game, Perk should get an honorary start just so that the entire crowd can applaud him.
I'm down with it, man. Like, I hope Miami does that with Wade, and they probably will because it's Miami. But yeah. Did you see Perk's announcement on his Twitter and Instagram?
I did. How is Perk so social media savvy?
I love that graphic up quick. I love it. I mean, look, there's a reason why Perk stuck around as long as he did. And those guys, if we want to be robots – and pretend that these guys are like we're playing a video game and these guys don't have feelings and emotions, all right, then Perk serves no purpose. But the truth is, like, these guys are important in the NBA for competing teams.
Right.
You know, you need these guys that break things up. Like Barbosa for the Warriors a couple years ago was important. You know, he was a guy that they were all friends with, and he spent time with everyone. Pop has focused on this for the last 20 years, and we give Pop credit for stuff like this. But then when other teams do it, for some reason, it's just like, oh, it's a wasted roster spot. Man, it's not a waste. These guys are important. And so, like, when they got rid of Channing Frye, I had that concern. But bringing in Perk, I think, makes a difference. I'm just ready for the wine picks on Instagram. That's what I want.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and every game is more entertaining when you have Perk scowl, like, just sitting there on the sideline. Like, when the camera pans and you get that, It's just always going to bring a smile to your face.
Well, all right. So the game last night. Is it okay to talk about, say, last night? I don't know when this is going out. Not to make it hard to
the
to
Wolves
edit this,
game.
But,
the Wolves game. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Wolves game, right? So one of my big takeaways from that game, LeBron looked like he was having fun, right? And at the end, man, like that overwhelming joy when he was celebrating without Isaiah Thomas.
He knew IT was gone, man. Those deals were lined up. LeBron's like, the great thing about this deadline is that the Cavs may have traded for LeBron James because now he might actually start playing like himself and stop pouting.
Right. It's going to be huge. And like in hindsight, that celebration was the equivalent of leaving Andrew Wiggins out of the letter. That is exactly what he did. And,
I love this so much. I am so on board with this.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that it's so funny, man. Like, he obviously was just a cancer in that locker room. And you saw that last night. It was the happiest we've seen LeBron James in a long time.
Yep.
And he just ignored him.
And my boy Jetty gets the first chest bump.
Hey, you probably didn't see this. I mean, I already photoshopped him into the banana boat.
Oh, I missed that.
I think I'm Team Jetty. I think that dude, I think he's a really good player. I think he's going to be good. But it is obvious that he and LeBron kind of have a connection there, right? And I think that's huge. LeBron hasn't played with young players in a long time.
And it's funny because LeBron didn't want them to bring Jetty over this year. He wanted them to use that space on Jamal Crawford. And for Jetty to come up so big in a game against Jamal Crawford – and, like, I think he's you see all, like, the team Instagram videos and stuff like that. Like, the team just loves Jetty. Like, LeBron loves him. Like, I think that has already kind of transitioned where they understand why they did that. But he's deserved minutes for a while, especially with how poorly the team is playing. And I've repeated myself a million times on this, but the comparison for Jetty is – almost like a small forward version of Tristan Thompson. He's not going to start doing isolation shots and stuff like that. Like, he's going to play team basketball. He knows what he does well, and he's going to stick to that. And I think that's really, really valuable when you do have offensive talent around a guy like that. That can be your glue piece.
I agree. And well, the other thing, man, the benefit of having young guys on a veteran team is that they bring energy because so much of this stuff is new. You know, in the grind of the season, 82 games, like we talk about all the time. Oh, guys are checked out. I mean, look at the Warriors, right? Not to keep going back to the Warriors, but the Warriors look kind of checked out and bored.
Yep.
Well, the Cavs
been like, there.
this struggle for the Cavs, I think, is going to be really important. After this trade, I need to see it on the court. But I was saying Toronto was probably going to come out of the East. I just feel like they're the best team right now.
That was my pick as well.
And a large reason why I think that is because of the young guys that they've got. Anunoby, Siakam playing this way, Fred VanVleet. Those guys are bringing an energy to DeRozan and Lowry and Ibaka. And I think that stuff is important. Like, you need a good mix for chemistry for the team. And so I think that, again, man, I think the front office deserves a lot of credit. And we've all been making fun of them all year. Mm-hmm. But they deserve a lot of credit for revamping this roster in a way that should accentuate LeBron's talents and also make it a more fun basketball environment. And that, at the end of the day, I think that's the most important part for LeBron. Absolutely. The dude loves basketball. And you can see it. Like, when things are, like, fun, he just loves it more than anybody.
LeBron, right? Like, back in 2009 when he's dancing on the sideline and stuff like that. Like, the robotic villain LeBron didn't work out in Miami. No. And, like, he needed to start leaking into having some more fun there before they started winning. I agree with you. You got him loose.
I think people have LeBron a little mischaracterized. You know, they see this mastermind because he is – I mean – possibly has the highest basketball IQ of any player ever. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, man, I think LeBron is like a good person, a nice person who likes to have fun. And just like most people, I think, like, basketball should be fun. And I think great players, you know, there's a lot of pressure obviously on LeBron. And so that can suck away some of the fun.
Yeah.
But man, it's so much fun to watch the best player of all time having a good time. Like, was it last year when he grabbed the beer and pretended to drink it?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. I mean, like, who doesn't like that? So, having all these old guys suck some of the fun out of it because, again, they're pros and it's a long season. And I think that youthful, you know, injection that they're getting here at the deadline is gonna make a huge difference for this team, man. I'm excited for it.
Can you imagine how much fun it's going to be when LeBron's playing with that second unit, that up-tempo, high-paced basketball, and all of a sudden you have Larry Nance jumping in from the rafters? Like, that's going to be fun. Like, he's not going to help the team a ton come playoffs right away. Maybe he's going to improve defensively. Like, he doesn't provide a lot of rim protection given the athleticism and the length he has. And that might be something he develops over time. But during the regular season, like, that's someone that's fresh legs that they just didn't have. And that's going to help them get through the grind.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned after the Wolves game, LeBron played 48 minutes in that game to win on a buzzer beater in overtime. That's a problem. Like, you don't need that. I mean, you know, obviously he's superhuman, but I refuse to believe that he's not human. And, you know, running him into the ground for a regular season game in February to win like that, it's those games just aren't important in the long, you know, the long view of things. And so I think they did a lot to help. I think that, you know, Rodney Hood being able to slide up and play the three when LeBron's on the bench is big. Yeah. And you know, like you said, having youth, having some legs. Jordan Clarkson's good for 15 points a night off the bench.
Yeah.
That's important. And that's the one thing where LeBron was probably right about Jamal Crawford, at least that sort of archetype, but it just would have been the wrong player.
Yeah, it would have. And it wasn't what they needed. And I think George Hill is going to be perfect for this team. Like, he's best as a secondary ball handler a lot of the time, and that's what he's going to be alongside LeBron. I mean, he hasn't been great this year, but I think it's also kind of overstated. Like, he's shooting, like, what, 47% from the floor, 46% from three. His defensive game has kind of dropped off, but he looked miserable in Sacramento. If you get 80% of the George Hill that was healthy in Utah – like, you're laughing. Like, that is the perfect player. And as you said before, it's not a great contract. Nobody's denying that. But he's someone that could really, really help this team in the short term and kind of help them figure out a solution for the long term, whether that be by trading the Brooklyn pick in the future for a point guard, or by drafting someone like Trae Young and giving them a veteran to kind of help him develop and come along. So it'll be really interesting to see what this team does. It just feels like they have so many more options and possibilities than they did 24 hours ago.
Yeah. So check this out. So he's shooting 45% on three threes a game. So it's not a great sample size. Last year he shot 40% on almost five a game. Well, he's going to shoot more threes.
Yeah.
So let's say he drops to 40%, but he's shooting six or seven threes a game that are going to be wide open. That's so much less than he has to do now. Like, he's not having to shoot these off the dribble in Cleveland. He's gonna be catch and shoot exclusively. Maybe you get some George Hill, LeBron pick and roll with George Hill as the ball handler, which, guess what? Those are easy shots too. He's going to be more efficient than he is currently, at higher volume, and will have some energy for the defensive end.
Right.
You know, are you telling me that George Hill can't come in there and defend and be five times better than what they've had at the point this year?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, as much as these guys have kind of disappointed defensively this season, they've disappointed in comparison to what their abilities and their physical stature would indicate. Like, Rodney Hood hasn't been great defensively, but he's certainly better than anything that they had before. Same with George Hill and even Jordan Clarkson. Like, it's going to improve the team on that end of the floor.
Yeah, and I'm going to call out LeBron on this, because LeBron's defensive effort has been piss poor for a couple of years now. We saw last night how dangerous he can be as a weak side blocker. I mean, he got that huge block.
Yeah, that's his ideal role. Like, as an individual defender, LeBron is not a great defender anymore. Even when he's locked in, he just can't play one-on-one defense at that level, given the responsibilities he has offensively. So what you hope for, and that's what the logic was behind Jay Crowder, is that you can have some stopper on the wing that allows him to play free safety. And the Cavs kind of punted that. I don't think they have that guy now. I think Rodney Hood does a good job on shooting guards, but he doesn't really have the strength to deal with forwards. And sure, that's going to hurt them against the Warriors. But this trade increases the likelihood that they're even going to get the opportunity to play the Warriors. And really, like, that's the best that you could expect, because they weren't going to beat the Warriors at any point this season, like, whether they made a move or they didn't. So if you can increase the likelihood that you get there and that you're even going to face the Warriors, and you help out the future of this franchise, I think that's a win.
They put themselves back in contention in the East, I think, and then they gave themselves a puncher's chance at the Warriors, which is all – you know, I mean –
They're in position. Maybe Houston somehow beats the Warriors. Draymond kicks them in the groin.
Exactly.
And then when they make it to the finals, Chris Paul and Harden just crap themselves. Like,
right.
Maybe that happens.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing to keep in mind. And, you know, again, I still think that, I'm sounding like a broken record now, but we need to keep talking about the fact that not only did they give them a better team today, but next year, I mean, even without LeBron, I still think that's a bottom rung playoff team next year while keeping the Nets pick. And that is just huge in this league. Like, it's so hard to do.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm really excited to watch Cavs basketball for the first time in a while.
Yeah, me too. I dreaded it every game, man.
I was watching it like a car crash the last few weeks, right? Like, I mean, I must see TV just because I wanted to watch how bad it was. I mean, that Magic game being the absolute worst.
That's one thing I do appreciate, is if you're going to be anything, like, just don't be boring. Like, you don't have to be a contender, but, like, keep it interesting. And the Cavs do a really, really good job of that.
If you're going to be bad, at least be, you know, full of drama as well.
Exactly. That's all I really want.
Yeah. The one thing I think that was missing during that whole drama was we didn't get enough LeBron subtweeting.
No, we really didn't.
Yeah,
I really didn't.
That was a little disappointing.
What I'm hoping for is that, like, tomorrow, before the game, we get Kevin Love wearing, like, Brinks little flip-flops.
Oh, my God. That would be incredible. But, you know, back to your point about Kevin Love being Teflon, like, I know that was, like, 30 minutes ago, but
– that's my guy.
Dude, the guy's a productive player. Like, he's a really good player. Of all the guys to point out, I just think, like, I don't know. It's weird to call out that guy.
Yeah, the guy that has been one of two consistent players on the team this season.
Right.
Like, it just never made any sense.
I'm trying to pull up the schedule right now. When does Cleveland play the Lakers?
I think March 11th was what I
saw. I'm pumped for that. Yeah. I'm pumped for that.
Isaiah might not be on the team March 11th. By that point.
He may not be on the team, but man, I'm excited about it. Dude. Has anyone's stock dropped as quickly as Isaiah Thomas? Without some kind of domestic abuse or something like that?
Probably not.
It's sad. But
I guess the only other player I can think of in sports, which another Boston team would be Aaron Hernandez. Too soon.
Oh my God. Oh,
that might have been too soon.
That, yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if the Lakers are going to keep him. That's going to be really interesting. I think I saw a quote, Magic and Palinka were saying that they believe he and Ball can play together, and that's going to be that's a really poor defensive starting backcourt there.
Ball's not bad. And,
no,
and
he's not bad, but he's a rookie, right? So, I think even a good defensive rookie doesn't play great team defense. Ball has surprised me, but if he's switching over to guarding shooting guards all the time because of Isaiah, or he's has to guard the best defensive guard every single game, which I don't know, I don't think that's always been the case this season, that's a much tougher position to put him in.
Yeah, and the thing about it is it actually puts Ball in a little bit of a better position because he can play off ball exclusively. But the problem is Isaiah Thomas doesn't pass, so nobody would ever touch it.
Right.
You won't get any good, beautiful offense like they want to get. It's literally high pick and roll, and that's it.
Man, even if he's bought out, what team's taking a chance on him? Because you would think
no
you would,
one.
Yeah, you would think
he's a minimum contract this summer, or he's in China. How far are we from Isaiah Thomas the musical?
man,
it's a bummer. I always feel bad for these guys, man. Because again,
he brought it on himself, though. If he accepted a smaller role or an adjustment period and played a little bit different, this is a totally different discussion.
But if he hadn't gotten hurt, the discussion is also likely different, right? And so I try to keep that
in Boston's respect. Medical team didn't, if they shut him down and didn't play him for way too long when he was hurt. Then they would still be employed and they wouldn't have been fired. And then Ainge wouldn't get to trade him, which I think was the motivation there.
There's been a lot of talk recently about how Cleveland should have rescinded the trade.
Yeah, as soon as
how
they
do
saw
you feel
his
about
hip.
That?
Yeah, yeah. As soon as they saw his hip, they probably should have. I think they did a great job in salvaging it. My favorite, or my second favorite deal that was out there was the Brogdon, Middleton, and a first round pick. Just because I'm such a big fan of Chris Middleton. Brogdon's obviously a nice player too. It's hard for me now because I feel like it's really worked out and it's a different team, and that moving forward they really needed this injection of youth. But man, that definitely would have been a really good return. And whether or not there's two factors in this. One is how hilarious it would be for that to blow up for Boston, that Isaiah Thomas is now out until February, and you don't get to trade him, and that just destroys everything for them. And then the other factor is how high this Brooklyn pick ends up being, because right now they're tied in the loss column for most losses in the NBA. They've been the second worst team over the last 17 or 18 games in terms of net rating. So it'll be interesting.
They have a really hard schedule remaining.
Yeah, they do. If you look at the schedule right now, outside of the Bulls game, they could realistically lose every single game in February.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see where that ends up.
I've waffled in the last few weeks on whether LeBron is staying or not. I know you guys talk about this probably more than you even want to.
We actually don't. Until,
oh, good. I mean, well, I guess I just I've heard a couple recently. At the Christmas Day game, to me, is sort of there was a difference, right? The Christmas Day game kind of marked a difference in the team. They had just finished up that win streak, which was fool's gold, right, against some bad teams. They got blown out. And then, wait, right? Did they get blown out on Christmas?
Oh, no, it wasn't a blowout.
Am I misremembering? When was the blowout game?
God, there were a few.
Anyway, they got blown out on Christmas. Or it was not a good game, not a good showing. Man, I'm very professional on this podcast. Anyway, so right after the Christmas Day game was when they kind of started this swoon. And then IT comes back on the 2nd of January. I was just looking at the stats because I saw that his agent was complaining about him not getting shots. And LeBron actually took fewer shots after IT showed up. But, you know, don't let facts get in the way.
Yeah.
Of narrative.
Not a big fan of that.
And so after that, when this swoon kind of kicked in, I originally was thinking, you know what? There's like maybe a 10% chance LeBron's actually leaving. Nobody's going to have money this summer. Everything's kind of weird. And his best bet for competing is just to stay in Cleveland and rebuild, which is sort of what they just did.
Yep.
And then you watch this last month go by, and it gets to the point where people are asking him if he's going to waive his no trade and all this stuff. And LeBron just looked beat. He looked exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah. He was just not happy at all with what was going on.
Exactly. And then last night he hits that game winner and it's like he's got new life. And I'm like, hang on a second. LeBron might be sticking around.
I think LeBron wants to stay in Cleveland, and it would only be if his hand was forced that where it's like this isn't even a competitive basketball situation, because right now the Warriors, like, testament to them, they've put together what is arguably the best team that's ever been assembled. I know they're going through a bit of a slump now, but that happens after you've made so many finals. They just have so much damn talent, and you kind of have to hope that implodes. Like, but for LeBron, if you put him in a position where he can just keep making finals and you put youth around him and he's able to age gracefully, I think that's what's important to him, because there isn't an obvious fit out there. Like, Houston would need to be a sign and trade. Like, all the good teams that are assembled now would have to gut their roster to make the money work. And the Lakers, like, sure, they can start from scratch, but even if DeMarcus Cousins didn't get hurt and Paul George didn't seem like he was going to stay in OKC, like, even if you land one or both of those guys alongside LeBron, you're still probably not beating the Warriors. Like, you still have so much work, because it's not just about assembling the talent. It's getting that talent to work, getting the chemistry, and getting talent that fits as well as the Warriors do. So it's just a monumental task, and I think as long as the team doesn't give him a reason to leave, he's probably staying. But it's tough to get into the mind of LeBron, because he is tough to predict. I don't think he knows what he's going to do. I don't think people in his camp know what he's going to do. So I think they've at least put themselves in the position where they can say, hey, once again at the deadline, we did whatever moves we needed at that time to become more competitive. We took on more salary, and that's all you've really wanted from us.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that you kind of hit the nail right on the head. And moving forward, the Cavs are probably his best option, to be honest. Now, not committing beyond 1 year, I wouldn't be shocked if he did another 1+1 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm back on, I'd be surprised if LeBron left. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, like, I've gone back and forth a couple times in the last week. Nobody knows. And you know, all the L.A. stuff is to me is just kind of white noise. Cleveland is a far better basketball situation.
I think they realize that as well. And that's why the news
even
came
if L.A. Even if they add Paul George, this Cleveland is just a better situation. And, I think that it's more talent, especially today, after all these trades. And I think that, you know, hopefully and Ty Lue, I was worried about Ty Lue for a minute there. I thought they were going to fire him.
Man, he doesn't look well. Man, poor guy. Like, he left the game against the Magic because he was sick, and he looked gaunt against the Wolves.
I can only imagine how stressed out he is.
Oh, man, he's aging like a president. It's crazy. Yeah.
I feel bad for him, because, you know, like, the X's and O's are the X's and O's, and, you know, a lot of head coaches are not great at him. But he's in there because he's a relationship guy as a coach, right? He's a motivator and things like that. And he's not a bad coach. This is not Mark Jackson. right? He's not putting limits on his team or anything like that. Now, there are definitely some schematic things defensively and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of that gets delegated to assistants anyway in every team, right? They basically have defensive coordinators and stuff like that. So the head coach needs to step in and fix that stuff, but it's hard to do it once the season's rolling.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they thought they were maximizing their personnel with the way they played, you know, with the way they played, but the effort hasn't been there, right? Yeah. So hopefully with these young guys, you see an increased effort, more vigor. I love to use that word when I can, but more vigor on defense and they actually turn it up a notch. Because as it stands right now, I mean, when was the last time a team in the bottom five in defense made the finals?
Well, to be fair, the Cavs were the worst defensive team in the league after the All-Star break last year.
It's true.
So
if we're going season long. But they flipped the switch, which I think the switch is in Boston now.
Kyrie was a little bit helpful.
How underrated, and I mean, I'll be the first one to admit it. I underrated.
Yeah, you better admit it, man. We had too many arguments about
that. I know. I will be the first to admit I underrated how important he was for that team. And, you know, he did a lot for them, and you didn't get to see it until he was gone. Mm-hmm. And we're actually seeing in Boston, I mean, the Boston offense, which might not be talked about enough, is pretty ugly and atrocious.
Oh, yeah. And he's just dragging that.
And, yeah, he's the bailout.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, like, a lot of people love Brad Stevens, and I give him a lot of props, but that offense is not – that's not the beautiful game up there.
No. So the young guys are hitting their four shots a game within the flow of the offense, and nobody else can create.
Right. And Kyrie is dragging them to like the 22nd or 23rd best offense in the league. So, I didn't hate Kyrie. I love to watch Kyrie. I just didn't think that – I thought he was kind of just he was a nice piece to have, but he wasn't that important. Like, you could fill that – if you got a better shooter – a guy who could spot up, play better defense, you would make up for Kyrie. I mean, I was wrong about that. Very much so.
So was the Warriors front office when they thought they were better with Dele.
I'll admit this too. And I know that,
I don't know
how many Cavs listeners I have. So it's my chance to sort of like, let me
reconcile. This is a confessional. I'm the pastor here.
I texted a very prominent podcaster who I'm buddies with the day of that trade.
Cool break.
Well, I didn't say name. I don't want a name drop, but just someone who is well respected. Let's put it that way. And I said, man, really feel like Boston overpaid for Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, you weren't alone with those takes.
I know.
And the funny thing was, like, man, so many people I saw with those opinions. They were laughing later, and they're like, oh man, Cleveland got swindled. Look at this. Because I knew it all along. And it's like,
right.
What?
Not heck? Me. Now,
yeah.
Now
no,
what
you
I
are,
say,
you are honest. We can have disagreements, but you at least are objective, and you understand where your bias has come from, and you admit when you're wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciate that.
It's about, so the aesthetics, right? For Kyrie is one of my big, that was one of my big things, is like his offense was so dependent on isolation. And I'm a basketball coach, man. So, like, I'm naturally against that. You know, I want to see the ball moving and stuff like that. But I can appreciate his skill. I mean, he's fantastic. Yeah. But the Nets pick, I had flipped my opinion on the Nets pick by preseason, because I got to see those guys right at the start of preseason. The Nets made that D'Angelo Russell deal.
Yeah.
And I got to see some of the stuff they were going to be doing. And you know, Jared Allen I was high on anyway. And I wasn't even sure how many minutes he was going to get. And so I was like, I think the Nets are a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so that was when I started to realize, okay, so they actually didn't – I mean, Boston really got the better end of the deal on that.
No, what drives me nuts is that – people that were saying that the Nets pick, and there were quite a few after the deal that were saying the Nets aren't going to be as bad as people think, all the reasons that they had were wrong. It was like Jeremy Lin and D'Angelo Russell, like these guys, and they do play gorgeous basketball. Sure. They are so well coached.
Yeah.
But it was those guys going down. Like, they are much worse with Russell on the court because Spencer Dinwiddie has been so good. So it hasn't been the way people predicted. And now that Russell's back, it's kind of taken the possessions away from Dinwiddie, and they're trying to figure that out. And now Okafor's there to walk his way up and down the court and take away the pace that they were playing with. So it's funny, but as we said,
being wrong about Jay Crowder, was really tough. That was hard for me, 'cause I love Jay Crowder.
Yeah. That was the one part I was happy about other than the pick.
Yeah. I even said, I think Jay Crowder was the most valuable piece to Cleveland in that trade.
I had wrote before the season that the Cavs should trade IT to the Clippers along with their own first round pick for Patrick Beverley. People got mad.
That would have been amazing. That would have been an amazing deal.
Yeah.
Except for Beverley getting hurt, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. Maybe in a vacuum in Cleveland. Who knows?
Right. Maybe. But yeah, Jay Crowder. And then I say that, and then some of my Boston people reached out and they were like, dude, Jay Crowder hasn't been good for like a season and a half.
Yeah. It's been rough.
And so, you know, I think in Utah, we might actually see something closer to the Boston version of Jay Crowder.
I hope so, because he's a good guy. Like, I didn't hear a lot.
And he's had a rough – man, it was a rough year. Like, you know, I mean, his mother passing away and getting traded on the same day. Like, that couldn't have been easy. And, you know, I know, like, it interfered with his offseason work and stuff like that. And I don't want to sit here and make excuses for him. He's still a professional athlete.
But it's February now.
Right. And their defensive scheme in Utah, I think, is a little bit more well suited to him because he gets to guard.
There's other defensive players.
Right. He's not trying to be on ball on the best player of the opposing team every possession, and also rim protect and all these other things. So, you know, I hope he does well, man, because I love dudes like that. I like those grinder guys that are like, you know, they start out as fringe players and they work their way into, you know, being respected.
No, who's a grinder? You, buddy. You grind. You get the work
Thanks,
done.
Buddy.
As we wrap this up, plug your stuff, man. Let the people know where they can find you.
Well, I have my own podcast, very generically named On the NBA with Dave Dufour.
There you go.
You can follow me on Twitter at Dave Dufour NBA, just like everyone else. Kind of trying to keep it generic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Twitter feed is not generic.
Yeah.
All right. I will mix.
You could use a little bit of spice.
Hey, hang on. You haven't been on my. All right, I made an IT tribute video that I got my hands on.
Ooh.
I didn't make it. No, I made it. anyway, so I made a little. I try to keep it light, man. Basketball's fun, right? So
exactly.
You know, I will mix in with my analysis. I like to mix in jokes too. I think, you know, if we take anything too seriously, and there are definitely people that I think take things way too seriously.
Yeah.
How much fun is in that? And I mean, you know. I'm in the gym every day, and I'm roasting my players.
Oh, do you work out, bro?
Yeah. I mean the basketball gym.
Sure, sure,
I don't mean like lifting weights. I mean, which I do. But, you know, I mean the basketball gym every day. And, like, to me, like, a big part of basketball is roasting. You know, you're roasting each other, right? Like,
yeah,
I love
it's a sport with personality. Like, that's why it's such a growing game in comparison to other leagues.
And so, you know, I try to do that with my analysis. And, you know, sometimes people get mad, but, like, it's all right. You'll live. We'll all live. Like, it's all supposed to be in good fun. And I hopefully, you know, if I pick up any new followers or listeners, they kind of come in with that mindset. Like, this is why I really love you so much, because I, like, from a fan perspective, right? Like, you're a fan of this team. You just happen to cover them.
Yeah.
And I think that your takes are so – first of all, you actually analyze the situation and you don't put on your fan hat when you're talking about the team. And I love that.
I like being right.
that's
stroke the ego.
But also, when you do put your fan hat on, you are so self-deprecating. Like, it's endearing as – I mean, it's so endearing. And Carter's great about it too. And I'm really disappointed he's not here, because I wanted to hear – Adam Scott, say my name.
Yeah, God. We'll need to have you on once with Carter, because
he's
stupid, him and his job producing sports radio. Come on.
Yeah, he gave me that lame excuse.
Jerk.
Yeah. But anyway, but this is why, I mean, like, again, man, like, your show is a must listen for me, because of your, it's fun. And you guys, you treated it as such. And, you know, this is why I love Andy and Sam too. And like, I even love the way you guys interact with each other. You keep it light, you keep it fun. And that's what I try to do too. Like, so I try to emulate you guys a little bit in that. I think it's important, and it's way more fun when we're all trying to have fun.
Exactly, exactly. It's much better. So, again, to all our listeners, make sure you check out Dave's podcast on the NBA with Dave Dufour. Yeah, you had a good solo pod. That's tough to do, man. Right before the deadline, that's not easy at all.
Dude, you know what? Couldn't do it without Periscope. I was sitting there, and I've done them before just with no Q&A or whatever, and, man, it's hard. But
Colin Cowherd, like, as trash as his takes are, how does he do that all the time?
Well, he's got a team.
Yeah, right? Like, but you also got to – you got to love yourself, man. And, like, I'm very, very – I'm all about myself, but I can't do that.
it's hard. But, you know, I've got a really loyal – audience, and like my core following, I will say, and I hate to talk in these terms, but it's just the only way to describe it. But my like core people that I interact with on a regular basis, you know how that is, are great. And man, they actually bring a lot to those Periscopes and ask good questions. And it makes those solo pods that I do easier. And what's amazing is, you know, my DMs are open, and these guys will hit me up and they'll let me know, Dave, man, that was great, or Dave, that was garbage. But they're really respectful about it, which I appreciate. It's why I leave the DMs open, you know, like, let's
you
have a
hear
chat.
That, listeners? His DMs are open. Well, thank you.
Justin, you've been sliding in there for a while. So.
Oh, you know it. You know it. Anyways, appreciate you coming on. To all our listeners, remember, rate, review, subscribe. It's the best way to support any show that you like, whether it be our show or Dave's. As I said, check it out. We'll have some more reactions. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about as the Cavs try to figure out what to do with this brand new team with only a couple months left. So thanks again, Dave. Thanks to our listeners. And as always, go Cavs.